please be seated. This is case number 59894, Aspen Financial Services, Inc., et al. Versus the Judicial District Court, Data Gentry is real party in interest. Before we proceed, just a couple of announcements. Chief Justice Pickering has recused from participation in this case. Justice Perry unavoidably cannot be here for this argument this morning. He will participate. He will be listening to the podcast audio tape of the hearing and will participate in the final decision. Okay, with those points, Mr. Bailey, you may proceed on behalf of the petitioners.
May it please this honorable court. Good morning. My name is John Bailey. I'm here with Joshua Gilmore, and we're with the law firm of Bailey Kennedy, and we're here on behalf of the petitioners. I would ask this court to allow me to readdress the opportunity to readdress the court with 7 minutes left with respect to my time limit. I'd like to make 3 points in my presentation to the court this morning. And those 3 points are based on the following summary of the facts. The petitioners, my clients, asserted claims against the plaintiffs and the counter-defendants, in this case, for defamation, business disparagement, civil conspiracy, aiding and abetting. As a part of developing the evidence to support and prove our claims, we issued a very narrowly tailored subpoena deuces tecum to Dana Gentry, a person who happens to be a member of the media. That subpoena you can find in our appendix at page 461. We issued that subpoena because we have reason to believe that parties in this case, parties who Ms. Gentry has publicly conceded she has a very close personal relationship with, that those parties have used Ms. Gentry to further their defamatory campaign against my clients. And they have done that by providing her with money, with loans, with gifts. And they have improperly influenced her by threatening to disclose personal information about her activities if she did not assist them. We issued the subpoena in a very narrow form to ask for 3 general areas of information from her. Those areas, communications from the counter-defendants, where they threatened to disclose personal information about her activities if she would not assist their son in gaining employment where she worked. That was the first area. The second area was evidence about remodel and repair work done at her personal residence by the counter-defendants. And the third area was evidence of loans and gifts to her by participants in this lawsuit and 2 other lawsuits where my clients were parties to. Through a motion to quash, Ms. Gentry asserted NRS 49.275, which we commonly refer to as Nevada's New Shield Statute. She did not, however, either in the motion, in the reply, or any time in this case, submit an affidavit attesting that the information sought by the subpoena was obtained or produced during the news gathering process in her professional capacity.
Mr. Ray, let me interrupt you there. I'd like to talk about the burden of proof here. Isn't it presumed that this material is privileged to the reporter? As such, the reporter holds the privilege, so the burden is on your side to show by preponderance the evidence that it's not privileged for some reason. Is that the correct standard?
That is not the correct standard.
Okay, tell me why you disagree with
Justice Gibbons. I disagree with that, and I look no further in this court's decision, which has been the law in this state for 25 years in the Las Vegas Sun versus District Court case. In that case, this court said, and I will quote it verbatim, absent compliance with the statutory requisite, no privilege of non-disclosure ought to be recognized. Any further claims should be supported by sworn affidavits identifying the news gatherer and attesting that the information was obtained or produced during the news gathering process in that person's personal capacity. But that's been the law.
But the court in that case was assessing evidentiary productions in the context of a defamation case. Returning to Justice Gibbons' point, when assessing the news shield law, who owns the privilege? Isn't that the initial question? As opposed to most privileges in the law, like attorney-client, doctor-patient, where the patient or the client owns the privilege, who owns the privilege in the shield law context?
The privilege is owned by the person trying to seek it. The question is whether or not you can properly invoke the privilege by attesting that the information that's being sought is information that was gathered in your professional capacity for dissemination or communication to the public. So, the question before the court is always, if you want to assert the news shield as a reporter or a person of the media, and you want to use that affirmatively to say, I don't have to comply with the subpoena DT because the information that's being requested of me was either gathered or obtained in the news gathering process, or it's seeking the source of information, then it's my obligation as the reporter to affirmatively come forward to the court, as you said in the Las Vegas Sun case, and provide an affidavit that attests. You don't have to add specifics. You don't have to do a particularized affidavit. You just have to say a couple things. I swear under oath, I'm a reporter, I've reviewed the subpoena, and the information that's being requested in that subpoena is information that was obtained or gathered by me in my professional capacity for dissemination in the news gathering process to the public. That's all it takes. That's what you said in the Las Vegas Sun case. That's been around this thing for 25 years.
There's a requirement in that case. A similar requirement is not required of parties when they assert the attorney-client privilege. All that's required in that case is that there be a privilege log asserted. Why should we require reporters to file an affidavit to take the benefit of their privilege when we don't make that same requirement of litigants in a privileged case?
Actually, in the attorney-client privilege area, you require something much more onerous of attorneys in providing information that's deemed attorney-client privilege, because as you noted, you do ask for a privilege log, which asks for who sent the information, who received the information, when was it sent, what's a general description of what the information contains. In this instance, you don't require that of reporters. You require something less onerous by saying, look, if you're going to assert the privilege, and we're going to give you the absolute ability not to have to respond to a subpoena, you have to first say to us under oath that the information that's being sought is information that was gathered during the
process. Maybe the distinction I posed wasn't articulated well. We do not require in a privilege log that it be attested under oath by affidavit. Why would we require a reporter to file an affidavit? Why can't the opposition to the subpoena state that the shield law protects against the production of this?
Well, this is the perfect case, the perfect case, and the perfect set of facts to answer your question. When you have asked a person who happens to be in the media, who happens to be a reporter, to provide us with information through the subpoena that is private information and has absolutely nothing to do with the individual's professional capacity and their capacity to gather information for reporting news stories, that's the example. This case is the example for why you would have, and why I suggest to you, 25 years ago when you rendered the Las Vegas Sun case, you were saying, look, if we're going to give you the absolute protection of not having to comply with the subpoena, then you have to, at the very least, attest to us that the elements of the statute are in play. This case is the example of when you look at the statute and you say, wait a minute, in order to use the benefit of that statute, the information that's being sought has to be obtained and gathered or prepared in the news gathering process.
There's a significant difference in the analysis. In the Sun case, they were a party. Here, Ms. Gentry isn't. She's a non-party subject to a subpoena. The implications of assertion of the privilege in the Sun case are far different than a reporter. Let's assume the facts in this case are correct, that a reporter has received gifts from a source or loans from a source. That doesn't change the character of the privileged information, does it?
No, absolutely not. It absolutely does not change the
character. Why are you entitled to that information?
Because in our case, we have claims against parties in this case that deal with information, or we believe information, that directly deals with these parties in this case attempting to corrupt a news reporter by paying that individual with gifts, loans, and other things, and actually threatening to disclose information. And as a part of our obligation to support our claims in this case, we have the right to issue a subpoena to a non-party and ask for the production of information. Well, if she were not a reporter,
accept that assertion as true. Where the Shiel law is applicable, though, we have said that you must exhaust other sources first. Why not pursue those claims through the normal discovery process against your opponents first? Must you demonstrate to the court that the only source you can get them from is the reporter?
My response is twofold. First of all, we have done exactly what you're describing. We are in the discovery process, and we have asked that information from other parties in this case who conveniently have destroyed computers and all kinds of things. The point, though,
but have you made a showing to the district court judge that you were unable to obtain this information from those sources, and is it necessary to do that before you can secure that information from the allegedly corrupted reporter?
And the answer is no. And the word that you use is to demonstrate
to each one.
To the second part of your question. And the answer is no, and the reason why is because of the word that you use, which is the applicability of the New Shield statute. I stand before you today not challenging or trying to restrict the News Shield statute. I'm not trying to impair what that statute means. My client and I will be the first ones to stand in line and tell you the News Shield statute is in good shape in Nevada. It should be applied where it is applicable. It is grounded in the right principle, which is to make sure that the public has access to reliable information. The point, though, is the applicability of it. Is it applicable or is it not applicable?
Mr. Bell,
the question in this case can be answered by yes or no, simply by looking at the subpoena and looking at the statute.
Mr. Bailey, isn't it also true, notwithstanding that argument, that under basic discovery consideration by a district judge, the district judge could still quash the subpoena if he or she found it to be too broad or moving into areas about which he or she had concern? Couldn't we reach the same result even taking away the Shield statute?
If you're asking me, does the district court judge have the ability to restrict what is being asked for a subpoena, the answer is absolutely yes. In this case, that didn't happen. As you look at the record below, the district court judge was asked to use the News Shield to protect Ms. Gentry from disclosing this information. We said the News Shield doesn't apply because when you look at the subpoena and what's being asked for, it is not information that's gathered in the news gathering process in your professional capacity. The lower court judge said, you know, I'm a little bit concerned that if she has to produce this information, this might be harmful to her credibility or to her career. Well, that may be true, it may not be true. That's not the test, that's not the issue. But Mr. Right. Statute, no law that says, in order to apply the News Shield, you have to engage in some analysis, and that analysis has to deal with whether or not the reporter's credibility or career is at risk or implicated. The analysis is whether or not what's being asked for in the subpoena is information which fits the definition of the News Shield. When you look at those two together, there is no one who can say that what was being asked for in the subpoena is information that's protected by the news shield. That's why, in this case, you don't have an affidavit. They refuse to provide an affidavit, and the reason why is very simple, is because Ms. Gentry cannot provide us with an affidavit that says that the information that's being asked for is information that was gathered in my professional capacity.
But she could say
it would be perjury.
But she could do so under the general discovery parameters of asking for protection against alleging certain very sensitive information. We do that all the time. And the other question I have is, we're hanging our hat, I'm going back to the statute now, we're hanging our hat on the fact that in this particular case, the error that you allege is the lack of affidavit. Doesn't the motion to quash, with all of the signatories and certifications that one must sign when you file that before the court, isn't that closely enough related to an affidavit to meet that requirement?
Absolutely not. That's not what this court said in the Las Vegas Sun case. And let me add on to that. We are saying that there are two problems here. There's two errors here. And I have just a moment to finish this up. We're saying there's two problems here. First of all, the district court judge completely disregarded state law on the affidavit requirement. And then after disregarding the state law on the affidavit requirement, completely disregarded the news shield requirement. And went on to say, I'm concerned about her career and her credibility. And that's why I am going to quash the subpoena. Of course, a district court judge can look at a lot of different things. That's not what she alleged in this case. That's not what she asserted. She asserted the news shield. We're here because she asserted the news shield. I'm here because the news shield has no application in this case.
Justice Thomas, you have a question?
A few questions.
Okay.
Looking at what the district court did, in your estimation, they applied the news shield. However, at the end of that, they seem to bring in the Schoen versus Schoen test and the three elements, saying that I'm doing this, I'm granting this this day, but you can come back if you demonstrate to us the unavailability of this information. It's non-cumulative, but more important, it's relevant. And saying you can do this, you can bring it back in camera. Why is that not applicable as we consider this?
Two answers. First of all, in the Schoen case, the court back in 1993 said the reporter has to first establish the intent was to use the information gathered for the dissemination to the public. Okay, that's the first requirement in Schoen. That hasn't been done in this case. Second, you are correct. The lower court judge said, you know, I will give you a private evidentiary hearing if you want me to reconsider this. I don't exactly know, and I've been practicing law for about 30 years, what a private evidentiary hearing is. But nonetheless, this is the same judge who absolutely disregarded state law on the affidavit requirement, and then completely disregards state law in her decision in Diaz, saying that the new shield applied when on its face it doesn't apply. So to answer your question, I'm answering your question very candidly, and I mean no disrespect to the lower court judge, but we certainly didn't have confidence when the judge says, well, I'll come back and we'll give you a private evidentiary hearing, when his rationale for quashing the subpoena was he was concerned about her career and her credibility. As if to say, if you come back for a private evidentiary hearing, I'm somehow going to weigh what you have to say versus her career and her credibility. There is absolutely no law anywhere that suggests that that's the test. You don't apply or not apply the news shield based on the reporter's credibility or career being implicated.
And the other part of the question, looking at that, looking at the privilege up front, is this just a flat absolute privilege or is this a limited privilege where the reporter has to come forward and assert A, they're a reporter, and B, as RS-49-275 states, that this information or alleged information does not pertain to a purported news story. At least make a basic statement.
Your question leads right into what this court said in Diaz, which is, if the privilege applies, if the statute applies, then it's an absolute privilege. But it only applies in instances where the reporter attests to the fact that what is being asked for is information that was obtained or prepared in their professional capacity for dissemination to the public. So to answer your question, once the statute applies, then based on the Diaz decision, it's an absolute privilege. But in this case, we never got to the application of the news shield because it doesn't apply on its face, and we don't have the reporter doing what this court said it is required to do, or she is required to do, which is to submit an affidavit saying, this information that's being asked of me, was gathered in my professional capacity for dissemination to the public.
Mr. Strong, I ask you that question because also I'd like to hear from Mr. Campbell in terms of how that should be looked at.
Mr. Bailey, the statute protects the reporter's disclosure of published and, unlike many states in the country, unpublished information. I return to my concern about the suggestion that we have said that a reporter must, by affidavit, assert the purposes associated with the news gathering information by affidavit. In doing so, does that not violate the statute's protection against unpublished material?
No, I believe that the plain, unambiguous language in the statute is correct, published or unpublished, and submitting the affidavit attesting that what's being requested of you is prepared or has been obtained in your professional capacity as a news gatherer for dissemination to the public, there's no inconsistency there. Because you're not being asked by affidavit to, in particular, describe what it is you have and how you got it or what your source is. You just say, look, if you want the benefit of the news shield, you have to at least say to us that what's being asked of me as a reporter fits the description of the news shield. That's all you're saying.
Right. But that seems to run contrary to the fundamental purposes of the shield law, where reporters gather all kinds of stuff, lots of stuff they don't even publish. And then they're subpoenaed in a case to respond and provide data or information. And if the requirement is that the reporter must respond by affidavit, that the stuff you seek of me is part of my news gathering activity, then it seems to me that in and of itself constitutes a disclosure and a violation of the shield law.
And I would, isn't that true?
Well, I would respectfully disagree with you, and the reason why is because you are not required in your attestation to describe what it is you have done. More importantly,
I understand your point about the Sun case, but I really think that the court has to examine that test because it was constructed for the purpose of assessing disclosures in a defamation case. I still wonder whether in non-party responses to subpoenas, the examination should be different.
Well, I would suggest to you that you never really reached that issue in this case because affidavit or no, and we know that there's no affidavit in this case, the plain language of the subpoena versus the statute tells you that the information that's being asked of Ms. Gentry does not fit within under any circumstances. I guess it is conceivable. I suppose it's conceivable that she was going to do a news story about herself being corrupted as a reporter and how she accepted gifts and loans and those kinds of things, and that was the report that she was going to do. I suggest to you that perhaps, maybe facetious, that's not what's going on here. She had no intent of disclosing this private information. And so, whether you have an affidavit or not, in this case, you look no further than what is being asked for in the subpoena, and you look at the statute. The statute is an appropriate statute. It's constitutional, it's well-based, it's well-founded. It just doesn't apply in this case. And this, the lower court judge abused his discretion and committed plain error when he completely deviated from the state law, both in Diaz and the Las Vegas Sun case, and came up with some other criteria for whatever reason so that he could quash the subpoena. And the reason was because he was concerned about her credibility and her career.
Well, it's an interesting analysis, but would Bob Woodward have been required to disclose a $10,000 payoff by Deep Throat?
I'd probably need a few more facts in order to answer that appropriately. So I'll just tell you, I don't know.
Okay.
It depends on each of the requests, presumably.
Okay, let's go ahead, Mr. Bailey. We'll try and maintain some sort of time monitors here. Mr. Bailey, we'll give you an additional 3 minutes on your rebuttal, you know, because we had a lot of questions. And Mr. Campbell, we'll give you an additional 3 minutes in your argument on behalf of the real party in interest.
This is a 30-minute?
No, this would be 15 plus 3, it would be 18.
Your Honor, if I might, context is everything but particularly on appeal. And given the opening remarks of opposing counsel regarding my client, I would ask your indulgence to permit me to address those opening remarks at this time. Following the broadcast of face-to-face segments on Channel 8, which examined the very questionable practices of Aspen Financial and its principal, Jeff Gwynn, Aspen filed a 45-page counterclaim against Donna Ruthie. That counterclaim was literally suing every salacious comment you can practically imagine, including an introduction on page 18 of it, which boggles the mind to read as a legal pleading. It featured chapter stylings such as Donna Ruthie's disdain for Chuck Ruthie's children, Donna Ruthie's attempts to seize control of Chuck Ruthie's fortune, and Donna Ruthie and her cohort's plan for revenge. One of the named cohorts was my client, Ms. Gentry, who Aspen claimed had helped Donna Ruthie actually draft the complaint in order to manufacture a news story, in order to publicly smear Mr. Gwynn because she had received compensation in the form of a house remodel, among others. At no time in the history of this litigation has there been any support of that claim whatsoever. That counterclaim was completely unverified. There is no affidavit that has ever been submitted to the court establishing any of that by any measure whatsoever. Merely the words of Mr. Bailey to the court in a pleading is all they have in that regard. Yet on that toxic record, Aspen claims that Judge Earle, quote, abused his discretion and committed clear error when he quashed the subpoena, pending a further showing of relevance in the need by Aspen for an evidentiary hearing. This court's decision in Diaz specifically recognized that it was the news-gathering process and the fostering of the free flow of information that was at the heart of the protection to be employed by the News Shield law. That is exactly what we argued to the court below. We came into the court and we said, the News Shield law provides just this sort of protection based upon the rationale that a news reporter should not be dragged into private litigation.
Mr. Campbell, let me, before you launch off into that, let's come down to the beginning, and that is, from your standpoint, is this just a flat absolute privilege for a reporter as to everything, or is there some limitation based upon statute?
There is an absolute privilege with respect to the reporter's documents prepared during the course of the news-gathering privilege. The courts provide and recognize, as Justice Hardesty pointed out in the court's earlier decision in Diaz, mentioning Schoen, that even absent that, the federal courts provide a specific privilege for journalists. And if, in fact,
there is some limitation to that, as you are stating that, but I'm looking at the statute, and the statute attempts to do some limitation as to this privilege when you're talking in terms of obtained by such a person in legal proceeding, law investigation, but was it done in a certain capacity, not just everything they do in the will? That's what I'm asking.
That is correct, Your Honor. And that's why the court in Diaz specifically relied upon Schoen versus Schoen. And they said, look to Schoen, even absent the news, even absent whether or not documents existed that they're after because of the news gathering. Can you bring a reporter in to private litigation on the basis of nothing more than just allegations? And Schoen versus Schoen, as was specifically mentioned by this court in Diaz, said no, because it's based upon a federal privilege that emanates from the First Amendment. And it requires, if you're going after a reporter, you have to show, number one, at least in the Ninth Circuit, that the documents are not only potentially relevant, but absolutely relevant. The Second Circuit, as we quoted in the Baker versus FF investment case, says it has to go to the heart of the case. In addition, you must demonstrate an exhaustion, as Justice Hardesty stated, of other remedies to obtain such information. And number three, it must shown to be non-cumulative. They didn't even try to do any of that. I suggested to the court below that it should apply that standard. I said it's not that much different from what you do when you're going after, for example, the attorney work product of documents. You have to show to make the same standard. Can they get it from other sources? Is it important to a critical aspect of the case, and is it non-cumulative? The judge, in large measure, adopted that standard and said, I'm granting the motion to quash now. But I'll hold a hearing if you come in and show me what evidence you have to suggest why this is important.
Is the same thing
do that?
Discovery still pending in this case?
I believe it is.
So why should we intervene at this time?
I said not to. I petitioned the court not to. They didn't take us up for that reason, Your Honor. They didn't take us up on that because they know that all of this is fabricated. It's all a lie. It was done to harass that reporter, to forever blemish her reputation. That's why they did it, not because they have information. They don't have any such information. And they're afraid of Rule 11 sanctions when we go back. That's what they're afraid of, Your Honor.
What's the discovery schedule right now for this?
I don't know what it is, but I will point out this. The counsel said that he was still discovering, they just discovered some information, but I'll tell you some of the information they just discovered.
Yes, Mr. Cannon, before we get into that, since that's not before us, if we go back to the beginning of this, when the privilege was asserted, we have this discussion because the statute is not clear in terms of how does the reporter assert the privilege. How do you respond in light of what Mr. Bates said in terms of...
All the reporter has to do, this is an appeal, this is a petition, this is a writ petition, and I'm asking, why should we intervene at this time?
And you shouldn't. And you shouldn't do that, and a perfect example of that is what I was going to say in that regard. They just hunted down, they took the deposition of the person that they said did the remodeling job for her. And you know what he testified to? I used to work for Precision, but I don't work for it any longer. I haven't worked for it for years, and she paid me every dime. No one else paid me. I did her bathroom remodel. To answer your question, Justice Douglas, in the Las Vegas Sun case, the question was, as Justice Hardesty said, it was a party asserting the shield privilege. And they said, well, give us an affidavit saying in your capacity you're asserting it. That doesn't apply here. It is admitted she is a reporter. It is admitted in their own pleadings that she was news gathering and that she was presenting segments on John Ralston's Face to Face. It's beyond question that she is a news reporter and that she has standing.
So we have to do that. Why, Mr. Campbell? Let's go back to the question. Because the statute is more definitive than we're giving it ear to at this point in terms of what it's talking about. Yes, it asks if she's a reporter, but then it talks about information gathered in the pursuit of something that's going to be disseminated to the public. And so the question is, does she have an obligation, as was asserted by counsel, and I wanted to hear your take on it, to at least make the bland acknowledgement, as Mr. Bailey was projecting, that she was doing something for a story or not.
No, she doesn't have to. The statute doesn't require an affidavit at all.
No one in that statute is silent as that, but it has certain things that are stated in 49275 that no reporter, former reporter, or editorial employee of any newspaper, periodical, or press association or employee of any radio or television station may be required to disclose any published or unpublished information obtained or prepared by such person in such person's professional capacity in gathering, receiving, or processing information for communication to the public.
Right.
So, with that mouthful, does she have to make an assertion as the second part?
My answer is the same. No, she does not. It's a standing requirement. She's already met the standing requirement.
But just an issue reporter?
So it's exactly it? No, because she's also in a news gathering process in connection with this very matter. She's already established that. The affidavit requirement in Las Vegas Sun is completely unattenuated to what was going on in this type of a situation. There's no question that she's a reporter. There's no question that we were before the court in her capacity as a reporter saying she's being harassed. This is oppressive. It is burdensome upon her. And we want you to quash the subpoena pursuant to Rule 45 as a discovery issue.
That's what we were asking. I may agree with you as to part of this I might have shown, but coming back to this, I am struggling with this just flat, absolute privilege of a reporter. I stand up, I'm a reporter, I don't have to tell you anything, period. Or does it have some limitations which require?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that that's exactly what the lower court was saying based upon Schoen and, for example, based upon Baker, which we've also said. Even if we didn't have the Shield statute, under the First Amendment, they would have to do certain things. They would have to show, number one, that this was a central issue of the case and this was highly relevant evidence. Number two, that they had exhausted all means by which to obtain critical evidence to that case. And number three, that it couldn't be cumulative. When they stood up in front of Judge Earle, you know what they told him? They said, this is important to our defamation case. This is important to our conspiracy case. Well, guess what? In the conspiracy claim, she's not even mentioned. She's not even mentioned as a non-party conspirator. And with respect to defamation, what Mr. Ruthie said on face-to-face either is or is not defamation. It makes no difference about what she did with respect to any other relationships, which she has no viable relationships, as mentioned by Mr. Bailey in that regard.
We shouldn't enter into this at all. My colleague, Justice Cherry, was completely correct. We deny the writ. We continue through the ordinary course of discovery, and everybody goes their merry way with the appropriate protective devices that already exist below.
That is exactly what the federal courts require universally in the United States of America. The only thing they differ on is whether or not you must show it goes to the absolute heart of the case, critical, or, like the Ninth Circuit standard is slightly less than that, Judge Sada. It is what it is. It says it has to be a very important and relevant, not potentially relevant, aspect of the case. And we understand that one of the primary contentions here is that this is an abusive process. That has been stricken. I also want to add this for the record. It's important to my client. Judge Earle has stricken most of these sensationalistic, toxic commentaries about my client on the basis that they were tabloid. He did the same thing with respect to the comments or the pleading comments about Mrs. Ruthie, that they were likewise tabloid and added nothing to the case and should have been stricken and were stricken as scandalous.
Mr. Campbell, I'd like to return to the law if I could. Justice Douglas' quotation of the statute ended where there is a comma. Thereafter, it goes on to say, or the source of any information procured or obtained by such person in any legal proceedings, trial, or investigation. Does this case present an opportunity for this court to assess, by opinion, the breadth and significance of that language in the statute, particularly as it relates to unpublished information?
I think it does, Your Honor, and it does present, although we opposed
the granting of this petition, it does present whether or not this court, for the first time, specifically adopts the journalist privilege separate and apart from the statute, the Shield statute. The journalist privilege which exists in federal law based upon the First Amendment, which is announced in the Ninth Circuit's case of Schoen, Baker in the Second Circuit, etc. Yes.
That's an interesting argument. Is the journalist privilege in the federal context narrower than our statute? And if it is it necessary to adopt the more narrow federal ruling?
Well, Chief Justice Pro, I think now or then, possibly, in the Newton versus CBS case, addressed that issue in and of itself. He said the Nevada statute on documents and news gathering privilege, which produced those documents, is absolute. But the federal standard is not absolute. It is qualified and can be overcome pursuant to a balancing test under Schoen. But in the state of Nevada, in that particular case, because the tort occurred here, the federal courts applied state law and specifically applied the Shield law of Nevada to prevent all inquiry whatsoever, Your Honor.
So in a case between state litigants, as we have here, and a state of Nevada reporter, why would we reach a more narrow federal First Amendment statute or First Amendment privilege? Why wouldn't we just interpret the Shield law as she sits?
Well, I think because there could be possibly a more explicit expression that the Shield law is based on the same criteria and considerations that the federal privilege is based upon. The court came close to doing that in Diaz, quite frankly. Three members of the court, Justice Shearing, I think it was Justice Mockin, and I forget the third, a six-on-one panel specifically dealt with Schoen and pretty much adopted it.
Did the district court in this case fail to properly evaluate or apply any test in deciding to quash this subpoena? I think Mr. Bailey makes a point that the reputation of the news gatherer who asserts the privilege is not part of any test that I'm aware of, and certainly not part of our statute. It seems like that was a concern of the judge. To that extent, I don't think that that's defensible. Where in his order does he cite a basis for quashing that is defensible?
Thank you for asking that, Justice Hardesty. I have it in my hand. And I believe that the consideration of that is, in fact, legitimate as one of many considerations. Here is what what Judge Earle said. The motion to quash is granted at this point in time. It is the court's position that there's a very high standard for the enforcement of such a subpoena under Nevada Shield law. We agree with that. If, however, the defendants can prove to the court in a private evidentiary hearing that some of the information that they have subpoenaed is absolutely necessary, soundly shown, absolutely necessary, the court will reconsider its decision to quash the subpoena. When news gatherers are threatened with subpoenas that could destroy their credibility, the court becomes concerned. Given our statutory Shield law, our Supreme Court's ruling in Diaz versus 8th Judicial District Court, and other cases, the court grants the relief requested. That's a totally appropriate order consistent with both Schoen and with the Shield law. There's nothing in any way that makes that some sort of a fugitive order.
Mr. Campbell, let me ask you one last question. I'm going to ask Mr. Bailey the same question. If you need a little extra time for both of you, we'll give it. Justices Sherrington said pointed out that we don't have to entertain this writ. It's discretionary with the court. On the other side, if we did entertain it and issued a published opinion, presidential opinion in this case, what points do you feel are important to raise in that opinion?
That there is, in fact, a burden shifting which is recognized in all the federal courts under that privilege. If you say you're a reporter, that's it. It doesn't require an affidavit. Then the burden shifts to the other side to demonstrate the need, and they have to come in with the affidavit. Not just an attorney mouthing toxic words about a reporter and harassing her, they have to come in and show, this is why we need it, this is the basis upon which we want this information, these are the sources of information that we have that suggest that this information is important to us, and that there's a basis to request that. That's what you would have to do. And much of that, Your Honor, is laid out in Schoen versus Schoen, as well as the Baker case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Bayer, why don't you respond to that question as well, and then I'll start you 3 minutes after that.
Question was,
if we publish an opinion in this case, what points do you think we should raise and address in that opinion? What are the key issues as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think what you'd first have to do is you'd have to reaffirm, because apparently there was some confusion about what you said in the Las Vegas Sun case. Mm-hmm. I think you'd have to reaffirm that either, and this really goes to Justice Douglas's point, if you're a reporter and you're asked to, by subpoena, produce some information, the very first thing you have to do is say, if I produce that information by affidavit, you have to say this under oath, it complies with the statute. Mm-hmm. I think the first thing you have to say is, reporters, just because they're reporters, the statute doesn't say you never have to respond to anything. And that's really the central point in this case, which is, if the news shield applies, in my view, it's absolute. It should be absolute. But it first has to apply, and a reporter has the obligation, as you said in the Las Vegas Sun case, to just attest. The trick is, though, that it has to be under oath. In this case, this reporter, Ms. Gentry, could not under oath say that what's being requested in the subpoena meets the statute, because that would be committing perjury. That's why you don't have that attestation in this case. But I think the very first thing you'd have to do is say, we acknowledge the news shield. It is alive and well in the state of Nevada, and we believe in it, and it should be believed in. But if it is going to be invoked, the reporter needs to do one thing. You have to say under oath that providing the information, whether you have it or not, you can't, if you don't have it, then say, I don't have such information. And that's always been the ultimate rule in this case, which is, all Ms. Gentry had to do is say, I don't have that information. That's it, period. It wouldn't be a motion to quash, there wouldn't be all of this. Mm-hmm. But the point is that if you're going to get the protection of the news shield, the reporter has an obligation to say, as this court said in the Las Vegas Sun case, you got to step in and say, this statute applies, because if I have to produce this information was obtained, gathered by me in my professional capacity for dissemination to the public. So I think that's the very first thing we have to do. And I think it solves this problem, because the statute applying it in this case doesn't work.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Let's go ahead and start the clock then, if we can now. Justice Tracy, you had a question?
I don't want to use Mr. Bean's time.
Well, if you don't have it, I'll
just pose this question, if I might. The affidavit or written response by a news gatherer necessarily divulges or invades the fundamental protection of the statute, that is the source. How does one respond, whether by affidavit or in writing, without divulging the source? That's the fundamental protection of this statute.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And in this affidavit, the attestation is all but one sentence. In this case, it would have been, my name is Dana Gentry. I'm providing this to you under oath. I'm a reporter. I've reviewed the subpoena, and the information requested by the subpoena if it applies to me, if I have such information, was gathered by me in my professional capacity as a reporter for dissemination to the public. Period. You don't have to divulge a source. You don't have to do like what you described in the attorney-client situation, provide a reporter's log, or any of that stuff. The issue in this case, and the elephant in the room, is she can't do that because to do that under oath would be subjected to her perjury. So instead of saying, either I have the information or I don't have the information, their tact was to say, we'll file a motion to quash and assert the new shield. Well, the new shield, as Justice Douglas, I believe, is settling on, if it applies, it's absolute, but it doesn't apply carte blanche. You can't just get a subpoena and go, got a subpoena, reported, new shield, don't have to respond. And that's what they would want you to believe. That's what they want to happen. The lower court judge went even further and said, well, you know, I'm really concerned about her career and her credibility. Where does that come from? It comes from nowhere, as you aptly pointed out. The point is, from my standpoint, in advocating on behalf of my client, I've got claims that I have to assert, that I have to have evidence for, that we have certain evidence, there's additional evidence out there. I don't have anything against Ms. Gentry. I have no animus towards her. She could be Jane Doe for all I care. She has evidence that supports the claims that I'm asserting for my client. I have an obligation to get that evidence. That's what this is about. And the lower court judge simply said, I'm concerned about her credibility and therefore I'm not going to respond. Let me say one other thing too, because Mr. Campbell wrote to you the judge's order. I note for the record, and this is Appendix 6...
Go ahead and finish your thought within 60 seconds.
This is Appendix 629. This is an order that was prepared by Mr. Campbell that the lower court judge just signed. Here's what Judge Earl said at the hearing, and this is Appendix page 597. The court, well, the thing that concerns me the most about this is that this particular individual is not a party in this case, and yet the information sought is so damaging professionally that to grant the subpoena would ruin her reputation forever. I'm hesitant to do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Justice Gibbons?
Yes, Justice Douglas.
One fun finding, because at some point it's almost, you almost cross that line, as my colleagues have asserted, as to why should we even entertain this petition, because of your position as the new shield privilege being absolute. And if the burden shifts, as Mr. Campbell has said, we then get into the Schoen case and our most recent Club Vista Financial Services in terms of unreasonableness, cumulativeness, opportunity to discover other settings. Why isn't the ruling looking at that of the district court correct then under the discretion as a normal discovery?
If you're asking me why should you take this up, you should take it up for two reasons. The first reason is that it is clear on the record that the district court abuses discretion and did not apply Nevada law, longstanding Nevada law. The second reason you should take it up, and let me ask the first reason, we are at the end of discovery, we have a trial date that's coming up in a few months. We need this resolved because we need this evidence. And Ms. Gentry should either say, I don't have it, or here it is. The second reason you should take it up is because it seems to me that you don't want a situation where reporters just simply say, Lucia, I'm not going to respond. That doesn't happen very often because in 99.9% of the cases that reporters cover that deal with lawsuits, they're not close personal friends with the litigants in the lawsuit. So in 99.9% of the cases, you don't see subpoenas to reporters saying, give us information that deals with your corruption with these parties in the lawsuit. This case is different. Ms. Gentry has conceded. She's close personal friends with the plaintiffs and the counter-defendants.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Bailey. We'll conclude this matter.
Thank you.
There's certain objection. There's no basis in the record.
Okay.
Just represented to the court.
Okay, we'll take that objection under submission, and the court will be in recess until 1:30 p.m. Thank you all for your excellent arguments and briefs.
Thank you.